Today's March 8th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $67,209.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
So we started off, I think you were talking about last week, I think it was kind of a recommendation people go fill up their tanks, right?
Yes.
And so we've seen oil finally start to shoot up. We were going to record earlier in the week, but nothing had quite manifested from that yet. And now it's starting to rear its head. And I know normally we open on something else, but I just thought I'd bring that up. That last week you were calling for that, and it took a little bit of time. But that's always, the markets are always a little bit weird, right?
Yep. Well, we knew that things were going to get volatile. It looked like they were going to close down the Strait of Hormuz, and they definitely followed through with that. So,
and a part of that that I think is interesting is that a lot of it is. Great Britain is unwilling to underlie the insurance on those tankers moving through, so they don't want to move it.
Yeah, no, it's basically insurance that's stopping it.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we can't insure you guys if you guys are going through a war zone, potential war zone. No, are you crazy?
Are you nuts? You can't get that oil out of there. So it's finally kind of starting to rear its head. We'll talk about that a little bit more later as we get into the episode. But how are our theoreticals doing after all this craziness been going on?
Well, theoreticals, they're kind of just hanging out at the same price. You know, bought basically $3,000 of Bitcoin in October 2023. That amount of Bitcoin would be 0.085 Bitcoin. And at today's price, that's $30,000 investments, that $5,948. So doing almost double again. A second theoretical right at the halving in April 2024, you would have bought $1,000 of Bitcoin that could have netted you 0.01564 Bitcoin. And at today's price, that $1,000 investment's worth $1,051. So 5% gain, I guess, over almost 2 years now. So it's been a rough ride.
Yeah, and I'm looking at our previous prices here. Like, you were talking about it kind of before we started going, like, and every time we go into record, we are just at about the exact same price every single time. We
see a lot of fluctuations in the week, but when we get to Sunday, it's about the same.
Yeah. And we saw, like, we're looking at the ETF chart, because I was looking at that before we kind of got going. And it looks like we're starting to see some more black days. They're definitely starting to outstrip the red days. When we look at purchases all around, you still have some red days in there, but we look at it a couple days here, like we've got basically like a couple $1 billion worth of inflows into the ETF, where we were seeing, you know, heavy, heavy outflows. So it looks like that's slightly starting to change. And part of that, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously I think there's a lot of that that's tying in and coinciding with what's going on in the Middle East currently. We did see a rally earlier in the week. We got up to 74.
Yes. Right at almost 74, I think.
Yeah. It may have been 73.8, something like that, but we were right in that kind of range. And, I don't know. There was a lot of optimism in the market due to that. And obviously, like, I'm always one that's always excited to see the market go up, but I still just don't think that we're there yet. And obviously price wise, my personal prediction is that right now we need to see what's going to happen with the weekly close today. If we get a decent close where we're at now, cause I think we're trying to see where the support's at. Cause we had been bouncing around between that 70 to 60 range. We kind of broke above it finally. And I didn't think we were going to stay above it, but we actually got a close above it. And then we dropped back down to where we're at now, which is basically where we were at last Sunday. Couple $1,000 difference, but not a huge, huge difference. So Bitcoin surged to 73,000 this week. They don't want to quite call it 74. So and that's mainly due to the inflow spike from the ETFs and then safe haven. And we're talking about that right now within the Middle East. I think that's going to be a really big, it's one of the big reasons that I think Bitcoin could be so important.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Saifedean Ammous, kind of the guy who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, he was in Lebanon when that country was falling, and he basically put all of his wealth into Bitcoin and got the heck out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, there's probably some people in, you know, different countries, because, I mean, right now, the war is happening with Iran, obviously, but they're attacking a lot of our American allies in the Middle East, like Bahrain, Dubai, that kind of stuff. And it's if you want to leave that, let's say you're just scared and you want to leave and you want to take your wealth with you, doing a bank transfer is not exactly the safest route. They might, that would take time.
Yeah.
And they may not even let you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know what could get in the way of you and that transfer. Gold is the same way. Like, you're not going to be able to take bricks of gold out.
Absolutely.
That's not going to happen. Even if you were able to get it somewhat out, like, you can't fly with it. If you drive with it and you get stopped by any means, somebody's going to be like, I'm just going to kill you and take your gold. I don't know if gold's necessarily the best way to get it out of the country, but Bitcoin is doing what Bitcoin is intended for at this moment, allowing that flight to safety for a lot of folks that probably need it. And actually, Bitcoin outperformed gold this week.
Gold and silver drop, basically?
Not really drop. I mean, they're just, silver's at $84 an ounce, and then gold's at $5,171 an ounce. But, and that was at the time, like, whenever Bitcoin rallied. Like, now I think it's probably flat again. I mean, we're right about where we were before. I think that's the thing, like, if we're kind of delayed in some of this stuff, because if we were recorded on Wednesday, everybody would have been like, yeah, Bitcoin's rallying, we're doing so good. And now we're kind of back to where we were. But I think the weekly close is going to be big on that. There was a big liquidation short that took place this last week. And part of that was due to the pro-Bitcoin chair Fed nominee that Trump announced. And Bitcoin jumped, like, it was 9% jump in 12 hours. Like, most of that's been wiped out again. Ethereum actually has done pretty well too. Which is common. Yeah, it's almost at $2,000 again, which, I mean.
Sorry.
No, it's awful.
That's pretty sad. I don't know.
You know, and they got their ETF too. I think there is an Ethereum ETF. I have never bought any of it, but It hasn't helped the same way that it's helped Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the printing schedule of Ethereum?
Yeah, that's,
you know, are they just creating it out of thin air all the time?
Yeah, I don't think there's a cap on Ethereum. I think it just, we've talked about this. I know we talked about this a long time ago. They, you know, whenever they came up with the printing mechanism with staking, of Ethereum for creation of coins, basically
versus proof of work.
Like, if you have a large enough stake, you get to kind of control the protocol, which,
yeah,
I have a hard time with that. I mean, and obviously hash rate wise, like, you could do the same thing, but I mean, it would take such a large attack to be able to rewrite, the Bitcoin protocol that, and you know, I think, there's been so many different talks about that where it's just not even worthwhile. If you're going to put that much hash power against Bitcoin to try and change the chain, you might as well just join the rest of the chain rather than trying to fight against it.
Yeah, because you're not going to get anything done.
Yeah, it would cost so much to create the 51% attack. And yeah, it's just, I mean, unless you're just like, you know what, no. We're going to crater Bitcoin, which, I mean, I always have a fear that eventually that could happen with BlackRock. Not necessarily that they would do that, but they might do that, especially if they have, depending on what happens in the mining space, if more and more of the miners especially become traded on the public stock platforms, right? Like their IPOs and those types of things. I worry that BlackRock, with the way they get their tendrils into companies and stuff like that, they could dictate what those miners do. And that's where I always think it's very important that even people have home miners, even if they're doing a little bit at a time, just to help balance that out to where they can't get total control of the mining hash, or at least a great percentage of it. There's also a rumor that Marathon, the mining company, is looking at selling its entire 3.8 billion BTC treasury, which I know last episode we discussed that miners had already capitulated, but apparently Marathon is still thinking about selling off what they've got.
Well, that puts some downward pressure on the price.
Yeah. That's quite a bit. It's 53,822 Bitcoin.
Man.
So, yeah, I don't know. And I know we didn't talk about it beforehand, but I know MicroStrategy is still accumulating, just in case you're wondering. Michael Saylor's trying to affect his average price, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, his average price is quite a bit higher. So when he's buying right now, well, especially when it dips, it'll kind of help his averages out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it starts continues to keep going down. But you got to say, whatever you think about Michael Saylor, like, this is the ballsiest move, and he's put everything on the table with this. He's not even hiding. He's just like, yep, and here they are, right on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. And I want to see him succeed, not just because I like Bitcoin, but I've liked his determination, his principles behind it all. That's the one thing.
You can tell he's sincere about his belief in where this is going. So, and we agree with him. So we like him.
Yeah. Right. And then, yeah. And then of course, on the Epstein stuff, he was too single focused. Like, they couldn't get him to cape on anything. So I'm like, I'm for that, man. So other big news, I mean, that was the biggest stuff that came in out of Bitcoin, for the most part, price wise, but BlackRock had some issues with withdrawals.
Yes, I did see something about this.
Apparently they have a private credit fund. What they call it is, they're not trying to say that they were having a bank run, but according to this credit fund, the redemption gate on it, it only allows for 5%, and there was 9.3% requested for withdrawals.
Okay, so they can have a 5% withdrawal, but people were asking for the 9.3.
Yeah, so more people were asking for withdrawals than what were allowed, I guess, within their credit gate, whatever they want to call it. So $620 million were paid out. The rest have been blocked. So they're saying that it's not a collapse, but it's a liquidity stress. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of this type of stuff that's happening, and you don't expect to see it from someone as BlackRock, because they are the largest assets under management, I think, of any trading group out there, or hedge fund out there, or financial services out there. And you don't want to hear that BlackRock has said, no, you can't withdraw your money.
No, that sounds pretty terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously,
what are you going to do about it?
I'm going to write a strongly worded letter. Well, you can't do anything. It's BlackRock.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Well, when you're doing that kind of thing, I mean, even Bitcoin, I think, you know, being involved with BlackRock is kind of a deal with the devil. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of cover the ETF flows, and really IBIT's the one that moves the market. But, I'm still not exactly thrilled with it. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. TradeFi has withdrawal gates. Bitcoin doesn't. If Marathon wants to sell all their Bitcoin treasuries, they can. Nothing's going to stop them. There's nobody that's going to tell you, no, you can't do that with Bitcoin. And that's as long as you are physically holding your Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it through BlackRock, think again. They may tell you, no, you're not allowed to sell. or you're not allowed to buy.
Yeah.
I know because I bought some iBit at the beginning and I slipped it in at the very beginning. I think it was like a week or so later, I tried to buy additional shares. And and for some reason, the exchange that I was buying through, you know, which I had my account through, I was not allowed to buy, you know, during the second week. They said my account didn't allow it. They didn't sell the shares that I have, and I still have those that I purchased, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like, what were the requirements? What am I missing? I don't know. To me, it doesn't give me good tummy comfort whenever I see something like that. So we talked about this at the beginning. Oil shock is definitely here. Filled up the wife's car the other day, and premium was like a good 40 cents higher than what mid-grade, or, you know, 50 cents higher than what the lowest grade gas is currently. So I think that's just going to strengthen. When we talk about, I think they said 20% of the oil for the world moves through that strait. How much higher do you think oil will go?
You know, when this war kicked off, what was the oil price at? Like 68?
Yeah, it was like 68 last time we recorded. And that was right at the beginning of the war. Like the markets hadn't opened up that following Monday. Because what, we recorded last Sunday and the war had just started on Saturday morning?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, I mean, just averages. I mean, it could double the price of oil.
Yeah.
In the long term. If this continues to happen, I mean, maybe the shipping routes, they figure that out and that gets priced in. You know, the oil will take much longer to get where it needs to go. Yeah, I think worldwide the market for oil could really be hurt. And so 140 is not out of reach.
Yeah, and I think the other part to think about that too is that that's going to return inflation. It's going to come back. It's going to raise its head again because energy costs are such a big part of the inflation number.
Yep.
And I think I just saw a report that Israel had just bombed the heck out of Iran's oil production capabilities too. So, and given, I mean, you can say that's neither here nor there, that's speculation. And I don't know how much, it's so hard with the fog of war, how much of that's true and how much is not. But that shows where more people may move some Bitcoin or move some of their money into Bitcoin just as a hedge. Also in the news this week, U.S. labor markets weakened as payrolls unexpectedly fell. I think there was a big story from Jack Dorsey where he fired a huge amount of his staff due to AI. Did you hear about that?
I did hear a rumbling about that. And no, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I think we are looking at the AI of revolution, and there's a lot of people. I mean, I think it's a significant portion of the population maybe get left behind.
Yeah. It's kind of disturbing. I saw a post last night. I was reading a story, and it's anecdotal. I don't know how much of this is true, but a guy was using what they call ClaudeBot, and he gave it instructions, and I guess that bot is working for him like 24/7. He took an old gaming machine and hooked it up and gave it instructions on what to do, and that thing is just working all the time. Reportedly from him, it's making him $7,000 a month just from having that AI running. I don't know how true that is, but considering your overhead on something like that, if you can replace your staff. And I want to say Dorsey said that prior to the reduction in staff that they did, their revenues were generating approximately $2 million per employee. And that was prior to the reduction in staff that they did. So it wasn't like they had to restructure due to lack of funds. Like $2 million per employee is pretty darn good.
With lack of productivity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was just, they didn't need it. So scary times for sure. And where do those turn? I've got another friend of mine that posted something recently about how he was doing some work online for companies that were looking for people to check Python code. And they were actually asking him to use AI. But it was there's a lot of NDAs signed. And then anything that there was nothing, there was no communication in the loop. Like, he got paid for the week of work that he did, but then they cut his pay after that. Like, they disemboarded him because he didn't meet the quota that they never really asked for. So, like, there's just a bunch of weird stuff that's happening out there. It's very scary times. So, bond market volatility, worst treasury week since early conflict escalation. Stocks obviously are down. I know they were talking about that during the Epstein case that, you know, the S&P was, or the Dow was over 50,000. Now we're back below 47, I think. So that, and then we've got the tariffs. A lot of companies are starting to look for refunds from the U.S. government.
Well, didn't you mention something about Nintendo's trying to get some money back?
Yeah, they're trying to sue the U.S. government for, you know, there was a lot of talk about the Switch 2, and I think it's performed okay, but I don't think it's done nearly as well as what they were hoping. I know this isn't a gaming podcast, but by no means was it, because I think they can do a couple things here. Like, number one, they're going to claim that it was the tariffs that had caused the price to be so high on the system and some of the games, which doesn't make any sense to me because the games are now digitally released most of the time. So I don't know, whatever. Anyways, I don't think the sales for the Switch 2 have been as good as they would hope that it would have been. And I think they're trying to blame somebody for it. And obviously, like, I mean, if you got to jack up the price, you got to jack up the price to cover the tariff.
Yeah.
So, last little bit here, is the Genius Act and Clarity Act. So Genius Act is now in effect. Federal licensing for stablecoin issuers, OCC oversight for non-banking issuers, Fed oversight for bank-issued stablecoins, mandatory reverse reporting, redemptions at par requirements, and 120-day approval deadlines. So really what that means is that for stablecoins, it's going to bring more liquidity, stronger BTC market structure, and institutions now have a compliant on-ramp. One of the other things too, I don't know if you saw this, Kraken actually now has a direct line to the Fed. And that's the first crypto exchange that has that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they were able to open up a direct account to the Fed. How does that make you feel, just out of curiosity?
We talk about how big and bad BlackRock is, but how big and bad are the central banks?
Yeah.
The Reserve. It's terrifying. But, you know, I mean, things are going to move forward this direction. So for good or bad, that's kind of how that's going to go, especially if Bitcoin does eventually take over. So.
And I think it was kind of interesting too. There was remarks from Ray Dalio. He was saying how, you know, the central banks will never adopt Bitcoin because of something that we brought up on the podcast several times, is because there's no privacy with it. It's transparent. Everything that they do, we'll know. Yep. And there was another one, and I can't think of the guy's name, but he was saying basically the same thing, you know, that it's not going to ever happen because of that. And to me, I think that is the positive to it, is that we do get to see that. And I understand, like, everybody basically has their safety deposit boxes that are transparent. Everybody can see, we all know who transfers money where and when. And I think that just scares, having that level of transparency and accountability scares those bankers for sure.
Yeah.
Last piece of that, and this is something we've been tracking for a while, the Clarity Act, it looked like there was some movement that was going to take place, but it looks like the American Bankers Association, which is the lobby of the bankers within the White House, rejected the White House's compromise on a stablecoin's yields. The banks involved were JP Morgan, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and dozens of regional banks. Stablecoins offering treasury-backed yields of 3 to 5% could drain hundreds of billions from zero-yield bank deposits. They're afraid of losing customers, which, I mean, I don't blame them. What? You could pay your customers the same thing and keep those customers.
Yeah, well, but they don't want to do that. They want to have their cake and eat it too. And it looks like they have enough power where they can make that happen.
Yeah. And why is the banks getting to determine the policies anyways? That bothers me. So much of that bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
White House is pressuring banks to stop blocking the bill. Ripple CEO says the bill is 80 to 90% likely to pass if banks stop obstructing. Clarity Act would define SEC versus CFTC jurisdiction. It would give exchanges a real federal framework, and it would accelerate institutional Bitcoin adoption. So, I mean, these are going to continue to be the fight, you know, and I was hoping this was going to get passed here shortly, and it looks like it's going to get delayed even longer. And if it happens to where this gets pushed out past midterms, I don't know if it'll get passed at that point, because the Democrats, anything that the Republicans are for, or anything that Donald Trump is for, Democrats are against. So,
well, just looking at the political landscape, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen in November of this year for the elections, but I just see a blue wave just taking over the Senate and Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, this administration looks like a complete failure right now. So that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. We try and stay out of the politics for the most part. In some ways we do talk about politics on here, but yeah, I am not pleased with the way the administration is handling a lot of this stuff. A lot of the policies I'm still definitely for, but it's like, man, you need to work on some finesse.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? What do you think will happen with the price as we get into the weekly close? Do you think we're going to stay below 70, or do you think we'll get above 70 for the weekly close?
You know, that's a good question. If you were to ask me, you know, at the beginning, or we did say something about the beginning of the month, you know, in April, the price is going to be lower. And right now, the Bitcoin is holding on. So I thought it was going to fall off at some point here soon. So it's held on. So maybe, I mean, I still think it's going to go down, but I just don't know at how much or when now. The world is crazy in, you know, predicting with the Bitcoin's price right now is going to be a really tough job.
Yeah, I agree. I do. Fundamentally, I want to say that Bitcoin may rally up for the weekly close. However, I do think we'll get a green candle for the month end of March. I just don't think it'll stay that way. And the only reason why I say that is because we have had consecutive month after month of losses ever since basically October.
Yep.
So I don't know. We'll have to kind of see how it plays out. We'll have to report back to y'all when we get back to this this next week and we get the next episode going. And who knows what'll happen at that point. Like, so much is changing every day. I whenever I look at the news, I'm clenching my teeth, just nervous about what I'm going to see.
Yeah. Well, and then if you get on Twitter for your news, it's just a bunch of AI slop and engagement farming. So basically just people lying through their teeth.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, I hate it.
I do too. It's funny because Elon's been talking about how Twitter is like the most used app or highest use app right now. And part of that is, I mean, I think it's great because you're able to see all kinds of unfiltered views from all over the world, but it's just hard to separate what is truthful and what's not. Like, what is AI slop? Like you've said, like you've seen, I don't know, I've seen like so many, and some of it's not even good AI. Like I've seen so many like video game footage of jets flying and fighting. And I'm like, that's a video game. Like, and people are like, oh yeah, no, look at that. That's so amazing. It's like, no, it's fake.
Yeah.
I don't know. Crazy times, my friend, crazy times.
Yep. All right. Well, at least you can come listen to us and we're not trying to BS you.
Yeah. We don't make any money off this. So we just do this because we think it's important to keep people in the loop in some way, shape, or form. And I mean, obviously we're not experts by any means. We've just been into Bitcoin for a long time. So yeah. Anything else you want to add?
That's it for me.
Well, thank you for listening. And if you're trying to get out of a war-torn country or just out of any type of escalated area, put your money in Bitcoin. It's always a safe bet.
Just remember your key.
Absolutely. Tattoo that stuff. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.